Hi, this is Becky McCray. Welcome back to the Great Big Small Business Show. We have a very busy show this week focused on the topic of planning. But before we get into that, we have first a follow-up from last week's show. Our theme last week was talking to your customers, and one of our listeners, John Swanson, has contributed some of his thoughts about listening to your customers.
Nuggets from an entrepreneurial chicken. This is John Swanson. I'm the kind of guy who doesn't have the guts to do what small business owners are doing. I'm an entrepreneurial chicken. So why listen to me when I talk about small businesses? Because I'm the guy that you desperately need. I'm the potential customer. Here's some nuggets. Nugget number one, know that I'm different from you. My son's boss bowls people over every time they walk into his small family-owned retail shop. He's the guy who pounds people on the back, who says, "Great to see you," and tells you exactly what you need. When we were in the market for what his company sells, we'd hated to go into his store, and in fact, we used the internet more than we used the face-to-face selling, because we are not like him. We're quiet. We're thoughtful. We're a family of quiet, thoughtful people. Now that my son is working in the store, sales to quiet, thoughtful people have gone up because Andrew understands that not everybody likes to have their back slapped. Know that I'm different from you. Second nugget, invite me to care. I worked for a summer for a company that made gravity flow racks for walk-in coolers. They had a great product in this family-owned business, but they believed that everybody ought to understand how great their product was, and they couldn't understand why nobody automatically came running to their preferred product. They couldn't figure out how to connect to the convenience store owners that they wanted as their customers. To figure out not how great your product is, but how well it meets the need that I have, invite me to give a rip about your product. Nugget number three, give stuff away in small doses. One summer I was up in northern Wisconsin. I needed a small part to fix something at the place we were staying. Walked into the Ace Hardware store in this town of 800 people, found the piece, and the guy said, "Just take it, don't worry about it." We went back to that store every time we were back in town. You don't give away your store, but if you give away a piece of information, if you give away some knowledge, if you give away opportunities, you're in great shape. It's one of the things that Chris Brogan is tremendous at. Nugget number four, be really good at what you're good at. My friend Gayla does power supply repairs great for computers. She doesn't do networking so well, particularly in the system that we're using. But on a Saturday night when our server was down, Gayla is the one that I called, because what we needed to get back connected was a power supply. She was there on Sunday morning. She put it in. We were back in business right away. Last nugget, help me know why you are priced higher and cost less than doing it myself. I can do all kinds of repairs, but the opportunity cost ends up being huge. It is cheaper for me to call my friend that works for Mr. Electric, who can come in and fix it in 45 minutes, than it is for me to spend 4 hours with 16 trips to the hardware store, because I don't know what I'm doing. Help your customers, help your clients understand why you may charge more than they would cost to do it themselves, but their cost of doing it themselves is much higher. Like I said, I don't have the guts to do what you're doing. I tremendously respect small business owners, entrepreneurs, but occasionally listen to people like me, because we are different from you. But you're the one that needs to get what we have, which is our money and our attention. Thanks.
Thank you, John. We really appreciate your insight, partially because once we're in business, we all know that it is so hard to stop and think like someone who does not deal with these issues every day. It's time to turn to our topic for this week, which is planning. Planning is not one of those exciting topics that people get excited about hearing about, but it is probably one of the most essential topics that we could possibly cover. So I'm thrilled that we have such a terrific lineup of wonderful segments for you this week. I'm going to start with the essentials of planning, and then Chris Brogan is going to give us some information about rockstar planning. One of our new contributors, Benjamin Yoskovich, is going to tell us about planning ahead to avoid crisis. Another new contributor, Bill Gregory, is going to talk about planning to protect your ideas in your business. Then Steve Rusinski is going to give us some more information about the four mistakes that he covered last week, the mistakes that businesses make in marketing, and believe it or not, planning has a big role to play there. And then finally, Laura Allen is going to close us out with the four keys to your killer 15-second pitch. And once again, planning has a role to play there. So let's turn and talk about the essentials of planning. No matter what you are trying to plan, whether it's the next action you're going to take, or it's the vision and direction of your business, the basics or essentials are always the same. You need to know where you are right now. You need to know where you want to go. And then you have to find the path in between. It's important to keep in mind that the path in between is usually not a direct line. And that's partially because your goals are moving targets. The world is constantly changing, and you have to be changing with it. So with your goals in mind, then you have to set those milestones that help you determine how you're doing. Are we moving in the direction we want to go? And how is our progress compared to what we wanted our progress to be? The more abstract and the larger and harder to understand your concept is, in other words, the bigger the goal, the more you need to be able to boil it down to just a few words, capture it on paper, and put it in front of you at all times so that you can bring your mind to focus on something that may be very abstract. As you go forward, then you need to measure, compare, and adjust both your course and your goals. In essence, you go back to the beginning of this process. Know where you are and where you want to go. Measure, compare, and adjust. So it's a cycle that never ends. And these are the essentials of planning. Know your path, set your milestones, get it on paper and in front of you, measure, compare, and adjust. To help us get a more concrete understanding of what you can do with the essentials of planning, Chris Brogan is going to give us his rock star perspective on planning for those specific projects.
Rockstar planning. Hi, this is Chris Brogan from Grasshopper New Media. I don't talk about the old day job here too much, but when we're talking about planning on this episode of the Great Big Small Business Show, I've got some experience. I have about 4 years in as a senior project manager at a wireless telecommunications company. That's in the past. I gave up project management for Lent, but I can talk a lot about what I learned from it. I used to do projects that would involve millions of dollars, a lot of hardware and technology, software lifecycle work, and all kinds of implementations that spanned lots of people, lots of time, and lots of resources. When I say lots of time, turnaround times on projects could be as short as 2 weeks or could be as long as a few months. What do I mean by rockstar planning? This is something you can take right home. Microsoft Project is a tool. I mean that in more than one way here. Tool like it's something you use to get something done, and tool like what you call the kid that you don't want to hang out with anymore. Don't hang out with me, Microsoft Project. You're a tool. I think Project is a good thing to use for that shifty, slidey, date-changing thing, and that's about it. Why? Well, because one, you can publish it to that goofy HTML view, but nobody can use it. Two, it's got all those things and pops and bells and whistles put in, but that's not what moves a plan. Here's the secret sauce, kids. Lean in really close. People make plans happen. So, what do? You make the tools streamlined. You learn how to trust the people and make them the experts. Let me talk to you really quick. I'll go through a project with you. Say you're going to move some hardware into place and you're going to build a big server. And so to do that, you need to get the power set up. You need to get the network set up. You need to get the base OS levels built and some software on top of that. Lots of disciplines. So what do? You call a meeting, a kickoff, and you tell them this. This project is to build this server. We need to go from no server on the data center floor to a fully functional server ready to process traffic with all kinds of connectivity and all the other details you need by this date. From what to what by when. That is the magic of project management. Everything else is tricky. What do you say to the person? You say to the guy who has to bring the power, I need to go from having no power on the floor to having six L620 plugs put into place by Thursday the 14th. And if you can't make it, here's the plan. You tell me as soon as you can't make it, and we try to work from there. I don't want a surprise the day of the 14th. I want a surprise 20 days before the 14th so we can make some contingency. You start making the people the experts, and you say, I don't want to own every little process and every little track and every little feedback. You make the project plan 10 lines and one line or so for every expert on the project. So the power guy, you just say, from no power to full power, which equals whatever you want for criteria, by this date. And that's what you do. And you say, you're the expert. If you have a roadblock that you need cleared, come back to me. If you think you're going to mess up on time, come back to me. Otherwise, I'm going to come and check in with you. I'm going to touch base. And we're going to have status meetings. And the status meetings are going to be 15 minutes or less. How do you get a 15-minute status meeting for your planning? You do this. You go, okay, here's the thing. I'm going to read off everything I talked to people about over the last week. And you're just going to nod your head because I've already got all the confirmations offline. So how's this scale to a small business? It's the same thing. If you're running a grocery store and you're going to add a new wing onto the grocery store because you're doing really so well with your sushi section, you say, I need a new sushi section put in, and I need from nothing over there in that corner to a fully functioning sushi session by 4 months later. God, why did I pick the word sushi section? Say that 10 times fast. This is rockstar project management. You don't need all those tools. You don't need all the tricks of the trade. You need to focus on people and learn what people do and learn what makes it matter to you. That's what you're going to do to move that needle forward. From what, to what, by when, make the people the experts, make them accountable, hold them responsible the entire time. Not in a negative way, in this way. You're the expert. Help me solve this problem. I'm Chris Brogan from Grasshopper New Media. Back to you.
Thank you, Chris. Chris is definitely the rock star of project planning. Our next contributor is a new contributor to the Great Big Small Business Show, and that is Benjamin Yoskovich. Ben is going to share some of his firsthand experience on what planning can do to help avoid some of the crises that can come up every day in business.
Hi, I'm Benjamin Yoskovich. I've been an entrepreneur for just over 10 years, with businesses in web design and software development. I have over 6 years' experience in project management and developing software applications for project management. I'm also co-founder of IGotNewsForYou.com. Small business people and entrepreneurs are fond of two sayings, putting out fires and wearing lots of hats. It's too bad stop, drop, and roll doesn't work when your computers have crashed or a vendor hasn't delivered on time. And I'm wearing so many hats, I might as well be on a runway in Paris. One of the biggest challenges for small businesses and entrepreneurs is a lack of resources. We don't have the luxury of employing a VP of really small tasks who can focus solely on his own work. We wear all the hats, from CEO to customer service representative, from marketing guru to project manager. And when a fire erupts, which it inevitably will, we have to run to the rescue, water in tow. So, how can we better handle crisis? And how can we handle crisis without our necks breaking under the weight of so many hats? The simple answer is, be prepared. But we've all scoffed at that sort of talk. I run a small business, Ben. I don't have time to get prepared. I know exactly how you feel. But there are ways of being more prepared, and once we put our minds to it, we see that being more prepared is achievable. Note, I'm saying more prepared. Anyone that tells you it's possible to be prepared for everything is flat out lying. the best we can do, which is still extremely valuable, is to get as prepared as we can with the time and resources we've got. Step 1. We need to learn from our mistakes and failures. We've all made mistakes and we've all failed. The most successful business people of our time, including the likes of Bill Gates or Richard Branson, have suffered failures, and they still do. The key is to learn from those mistakes to make sure we don't repeat them. Step 2. We need to keep a well-organized and ever-evolving to-do list. How many yellow sticky notes are sitting on your desk right now? If it's more than 5, we've got a problem. Maintaining a well-organized to-do list is critical to getting things done. And it's ever-evolving because you should be crossing things off, adding new things, and most importantly, always prioritizing and reprioritizing. Step 3. We need to allot time for planning. I know, there's not enough time in the day. But if you can allot even a half hour per day to planning that day or the next one and getting everything in order, you'll be the richer for it. Taking the time to sit back, step out of the fire burning, and get organized will help you avoid crisis and better handle crisis when it hits. Step 4. We need to anticipate roadblocks and possible failures. As we're learning from our mistakes and allotting time to plan, we can take the next step and do some risk assessment. Most of us already do this unconsciously. We know certain problems might come up in certain situations from our own experience, but putting the risks out there openly will help mitigate those risks in the future. So, learn from our mistakes. Keep a well-organized and ever-evolving to-do list. Take time to plan and anticipate roadblocks. It sounds like a lot of work, but try giving yourself 30 minutes per day to plan and update your to-do list. When a roadblock rears its ugly head, make a note of it, write it down, describe the problem and the resolutions. Keep that handy for next time. Do the same when a mistake happens, and suddenly you're actively getting more prepared without spending days or weeks doing it. And being more prepared helps manage crisis when it hits and alleviates those crises altogether. Thank you for listening today. I hope you've enjoyed yourself and found this helpful. It's been a pleasure and honor to participate. I'm always eager to meet and speak with new people, so I hope you'll get in touch. I can be reached at byosko@gmail.com. That's byosko@gmail.com. And I hope you'll visit igotnewsforyou.com, where you can send friends and family hilarious, personalized mock news pages via email by putting them in the news. Remember, at the end of the day, if the crisis isn't life-threatening, we should always keep our sense of humor.
Thank you, Ben. We are very glad to have you on our show. Ben has also prepared a handout covering his main points, and if you'd like to download that, you can get it at our show's site, which is greatbigsmallbusinessshow.com or just gbsbs.com. Next up, we're going to turn to Bill Gregory, another one of our new contributors. Bill is an expert in protecting your ideas within your business, and so his topic for today is the planning that goes into that.
Hi, I'm Bill Gregory, Regional Director of the Oklahoma Small Business Development Center Group for Northwest Oklahoma. I am also an adjunct professor for Northwestern State University in business and psychology. I also run a specialty center for new products development, and I've been doing that for the last 14 years. The new product center helps individuals and businesses with the areas of trade secret, copyright, trademark, patent search, provisional patent application, licensing ideas to business, and starting businesses with this new idea. Every individual who has an idea, whether it be a new product concept or a great name, has the same problem. The problem being, namely, what do I do now? At the same time that we come up with that question, we're excited and we want to get something done, and we want to get something done now. My best advice, slow down. plan what you're going to do. The following are a set of steps that I would suggest in this planning process. Number one, find an inventor's club or a technology person at a local university or a local small business development center technology person to give you unbiased answers to your questions. Stay away from invention companies that you see on TV or that are advertised in the back of magazines. These people are scam companies. Two, research the idea. Does somebody own the rights to the idea already? It is common that similar ideas occur in countries and in the world at about the same time, so it's imperative that you make sure that this idea is clear and that somebody doesn't own the ideas to the rights. Three, evaluate the idea. Does it work? This usually means that you're going to have to build a prototype. Doesn't necessarily have to be the finished look or even made out of what it will be done as it gets into a shelf somewhere. Just build a prototype to see if it works. Is there a need? Is that need different enough? Are there at least three different kinds of ways that this thing is different from other ideas that are in the marketplace? Is there a marketplace? Who's the competition? Will there be enough profit for the manufacturer, wholesaler, and retailer? Four, how will this idea be made into a product? Five, what's the best way to protect this idea as you expose it to potential manufacturers, wholesalers, retailers? It, which goes back up to number four. How will this idea be made into a product? You have to ask people, okay? Once we think about protection, everybody jumps to, it needs to be a patent. My thought is, a patent is not always the best protection for your idea. It may be that the idea is best treated as a trade secret, for instance. Six, gather more information as you expose the idea more. Seven, only after the steps above have been made can you really make the decision as to what the potential of the idea is. You then need to decide to license or build a company around this idea. Of course, this means a new set of planning steps that I will talk about next week.
Thank you, Bill. We are very glad to have you on our show, and we're looking forward to hearing more from you again next week. Our next segment is from Steve Rusinski, who's going to go back and tell us more about the four marketing mistakes that companies make that he introduced to us last week. And planning plays a big role in the mistakes that companies make. Steve?
Hi, this is Steve Rusinski. It's great to be with you again on the Great Big Small Business Radio Show. Picking up from where I left off last week, I gave a real brief introduction to myself and the top five biggest marketing mistakes that companies make. What I'm going to do this week is delve into a little more detail on those marketing mistakes. So let's review quickly, and I'll make a few comments after each mistake label. Number one, marketing without a strategy in place. The common mistake is believing your product does everything, your target market is anyone who has money to spend, and that you don't have any competition. Sometimes because companies are frustrated by a lack of revenue, they often equate limiting their target market with limiting their opportunity. The fact is, for marketing efforts to succeed, you must define a target market segment where your product has the most relevance and the best competitive advantage. Most of us can simply not afford to market everything to anyone, along with the delusions that we are the only option for our customers to consider. Mistake number two, being inconsistent with your brand. The common mistake is you change your company's positioning depending on the audience you're speaking to, the marketing vehicle used, or the person delivering it. Although some companies have actually gone through the steps of clearly outlining their company's positioning language, I find that many individuals within that company still have their own version. And this customized statement can change depending on who's receiving the information. The result? A confused audience, unsure of who you are and what your company does. that it's unable to convey your offering to anyone else. They can't refer you. Brand awareness is only built by consistently communicating your company's position and identity each and every time, so that eventually your listeners will repeat your positioning exactly as you intend them to repeat it. Okay, mistake number three, not integrating marketing with your sales efforts. The common mistake? Developing marketing programs and materials that fizzle out in the sales process and then never get used. Often, marketing resources spend a considerable amount of time, effort, and perhaps most importantly, money to create a collateral kit and a sales presentation for a new program or product offering. The salespeople reject the materials because they don't address the most compelling selling points. And then they produce their own one-off presentations and brochures that send mixed messages to prospects and customers. To further illustrate this point, many times a marketing team will launch a new direct mail program to generate sales leads for the sales team, only to find the sales team doesn't follow up on them because they don't feel the leads are qualified. Not having a clear integration between sales and marketing can only result in failed marketing programs, costing you lost revenue opportunities and wasted expense. Number four, marketing something you don't actually have operationally. Aggressively marketing a skill set, a technology, a product or service that you have not tested or validated, or even simply doesn't exist yet, it exists in the category, we could offer that syndrome. Your marketing team has created eye-catching materials, compelling positioning, and an aggressive campaign for the launch of a new company offering. The campaign is successful, however, you can't deliver. You can't handle the demands. You're either understaffed or worse, you don't have the right skill sets or the ability to deliver on the program. Or maybe the product itself is not available in time, or you have production problems. This not only upsets your customers, it demoralizes your sales and marketing team and the whole organization. They stop selling and the pipeline dries up. Finally, mistake number five, not using a mix of marketing vehicles effectively. Fixating on only one marketing vehicle to promote a company and or its products. In many marketing plans, we see only focus on one activity like direct mail or advertising or public relations or cold calling and do not use several or all of those vehicles together in concert. Putting your eggs in only one basket may generate some leads for your company, but this strategy will ultimately limit your ability to maximize sales opportunities within a target market. Your customers need to see and learn about your company through a few different vehicles before they will finally be prompted to respond to your offer. Again, this is Steve Rusinski, author of the Small Business CEO blog at smbceo.com. Look forward to talking to you next week. Take care.
Thank you, Steve. Our final segment this week is from Laura Allen. She is going to tell us how planning to make a good impression plays a key role in making a killer 15-second pitch.
Hello. My name is Laura Allen, and I'm the co-founder of 15secondpitch.com. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about the four key elements to creating a killer 15-second pitch. So if you're looking for a new job or you're looking for more clients, this is the show for you. And I've got an easy four-question formula to help you create your own killer 15-second pitch that you can start using right away. So let's get started. Question number one, who are you? You simply introduce yourself using your full name. Hello, my name is Laura Allen. Question number two, what do you do? For example, I'm an entertainment lawyer, or I'm a financial planner, real estate agent, fitness instructor, recruiter, project manager, whatever it is that you do. Question number three, and this is where it gets tricky for most of my clients, but we're talking about creating a killer 15-second pitch, not pitching for mediocrity like many people do. So question number three is, why are you the best at what you do? Question number four, and this is my favorite question, this is, what is your call to action? And a call to action is, at 3 a.m, when you see the guy who's selling one mop and then he's going to sell you two mops for the price of one, and you didn't know that you even needed one mop, but now there's two for the price of one and it seems like a great deal, That's an example of a call to action. I also want to read you three killer 15-second pitches that I got right off my website. And I'd love to hear what you think of any or all of these pitches. So email me at Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at 15secondpitch.com. I would love to hear your thoughts, and I would love to hear some topics that you'd like to hear about regarding the 15-second pitch. So let's get started. My name is Mara Sanchez, and I am a singer-songwriter specializing in creating songs in three different languages. I write slamming music and lyrics in pop, Latin, Brazilian, jazz genres. I am great at what I do because I have toured and performed in Europe and Japan and have shared the spotlight with Stevie Wonder. I also sing in three different languages, Spanish, English, and Portuguese. Right now, I am recording a new CD of original Latin pop songs and looking to tour internationally. So you notice Mara's call to action is very clear. She's recording a new CD and she's looking to tour internationally. My second killer 15-second pitch. My name is Noah Kagan, and I am a thinker specializing in youth marketing and creating cool things. I help get attention to people, products, and services. I love studying, practicing, and refining my skills. Are you lonely? Need some help getting attention? Noah Kagan has created a competition to help drive readership to 1,000. Check it out, as the prizes are very useful to getting your own site attention and improving your success for the future. Go to www.okdork.com for more information. And Noah is a young entrepreneur, so I think his website, his URL, OKDork, is perfect for what he's trying to do. It really fits his niche. And lastly, we have, hello, my name is Thomas Clifford, and I am an international award-winning documentary filmmaker and storyteller. I specialize in creating moving visions for organizations. For 23 years, companies like Deloitte, Honeywell, and Loctite count on my powerful stories in motion to inspire and ignite audiences to action. My signature films capture messages authentically and with dramatic impact. I listen well, I'm friendly, and I have tons of passion. Everybody has a story. What's yours? I think Thomas has a really great pitch, and I love how he includes his 23 years of experience, because that's something that really does make him remarkable. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope that you enjoyed the four key elements to creating a killer 15-second pitch. I would love to see and hear your 15-second pitches. So you can go to our website, www.15secondpitch.com, and use our pitch wizard and upload your pitch and show it to our 1,300 members. And if you have any questions, feel free to email me. My email is laura@15secondpitch.com. Have a good day and create a great pitch.
Thank you, Laura. Well, I hope that we have reminded you of some things about planning that you already knew but maybe weren't focusing on. And I hope maybe, out of at least one of our segments, you've picked up some gem of knowledge that you hadn't thought about planning before. I'd like to thank all of our contributors, Laura Allen, Steve Rusinski, Bill Gregory, Benjamin Yoskovich, Chris Brogan, and John Swanson. We appreciate your input. And if you will go to the website for greatbigsmallbusinessshow.com, we do have show notes, the handout from Ben, and the archives of our one previous show. I hope you will plan to have a very profitable week. Thank you for listening.